So the subject really was Isaiah 58, the heart of God. And when you read the passage, there are two aspects of God's heart revealed here. The first aspect is that he hates hypocrisy. And the second aspect is that he has a deep care for justice and for the needy. And I want to look at both those aspects today. If you've got Bibles with you, perhaps you'd like to turn to Matthew 23. Right throughout the Bible, you'll see God speaking vehemently with anger when hypocrisy comes up amongst his people. And here's a very good example of it when Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees. The whole chapter really refers to this, Matthew chapter 23. In fact, seven times in this passage, Jesus says, "A curse on you, you hypocrites." That's strong stuff. You know, God is saying to those Pharisees, "A curse on you, you hypocrites, you religious people." In verse 5, Jesus says this, "Everything they do is done for men to see." All the good works that they do is done for men to see. The motivation of those hypocritical Pharisees was not correct. And what they were doing was worthless in God's sight. I trust there's no one in this church with that attitude of heart. But we see it quite often in the world, don't we? People doing great charitable works. Actually, people who are involved in mafia-type corruption doing great charitable works, really just for men to see. It's worthless before God. Verse 23 perhaps sums up this whole passage. Jesus says this, "Woe to you," or "a curse on you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites." Sorry, I'm reading verse 25. Verse 23, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tithe of your spices, mint, dill and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy and faithfulness." This verse really is a parallel verse to Isaiah 58. And Jesus says some things here. Tithing and fasting is good, isn't it? Both these things we should be doing. But Jesus says this, if you're neglecting the weightier matters of the law, that's the New King James, if you're neglecting the more important commandments of the law, that is justice and mercy, then your tithing and your fasting is worthless. And that really applies to any part of our practice as a church. You know, if we're preaching, perhaps we've got a great speaker who's a great orator, and we're preaching the gospel so well, and we've such great programs, but if our heart is not there for the lost, if we're not loving and accepting the lost, then our preaching and our church is quite worthless, really. And let's not misinterpret this. Somebody will then say, "Oh, that's it, I don't need to tithe, so long as I just help the poor and give to the poor." In another passage, you know, when Jesus was preaching in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, "Listen, your righteousness needs to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees." Didn't he say that? And of course, the Pharisees were tithing and the Pharisees were fasting. So we should be doing these things. But it's devalued if our heart is not concentrating on the more important aspects of God's heart, of the law, which is justice and love of mercy and faithfulness, as we've read here. And that's what we see in Isaiah 58. Exactly the same in the Old Testament as in the New Testament. God's heart hasn't changed. He's challenging them about their justice and about their attitude to the poor, their mercy, their care for the underprivileged. And the first aspect he looks at when he's looking at the people of God is, get your own house in order first. Before you start reaching out to the poor or the needy, get your own house in order. There are two aspects we see in this passage. The first one is this, they were oppressing their workers. They were fasting and doing a wonderfully religious fast, but they weren't paying their workers properly, or they weren't treating their workers properly. Perhaps we don't see very much of that here in the UK, but in Moldova we see a great amount of that. People will go and work in Moldova. At the end of the month when they should be getting their salaries, the boss will say, "Well, I haven't got any money in, we'll pay you after a couple of weeks." And they'll work another couple of weeks, still haven't got the money. Perhaps they'll work 2-3 months, not receive a salary, and then they'll realise they're not going to get paid. and they will leave it. And that's very, very common. And it's very common in Europe as well, with workers that leave Moldova or Albania or such places illegally. They go to these countries to work illegally. Firms take them on and they don't pay them because there's no comeback. There's no power. They're not going to be able to do anything about. God hates that. You know, and he challenges us as Christians. Now, I guess none of us are doing that. We're all, perhaps some of us have businesses here. Some of us are managers in firms. None of us, I presume, are not paying our workers properly. But are we treating our workers properly? Do we have care for them? Do we have care for their needs? Do we overwork them? How do we behave towards our workers? We need to get our own house in order first. That's what God's saying here. Also in the passage, there's another point that he makes here, which is a very challenging part. A very challenging point. Look after your own relatives first. Before you start moving out to the needy, what about your own relatives? You're looking after your parents? Looking after your parents-in-law? What about other relatives? Do you have care for them? You know, the hardest people to win for Christ are our own family, aren't they? And so the biggest temptation is really not to bother with them. Let's go out and help somebody else so we can win them to Christ. But God's revealing his heart. And if we're to have any success, we need to have his heart too. Just as we've sung, have we got a heart towards our responsibilities, towards our own relatives? God says, get your own house in order first, and then you can begin to look out to other needs. And then he comes to revealing his heart for the needy in our society. And he says this in verse 7. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. We've already covered that point. So here are three aspects that God looks at. First of all, the hungry. Now, I guess we in the UK don't have many people hungry these days. There's social security. Very few people really are starving. But there's plenty of people starving in the rest of the world. Just in Moldova, you've heard me share things. You know, Jesus said this, go out and preach the gospel, make disciples of all nations. Not that many people are able. There are many people who are not able to go out. Perhaps those are maybe pensioners, are not able physically to go out into these other nations. Many of us have jobs here. Many of us are called to stay here. And yet, Jesus says, go out. Well, how do we go out? We participate in the works of others that are sent out. When you, with a true heart before God, when you give to a work that's happening in another country, I'm not just talking about Moldova, of course, you've got other missionaries here, but when you give, when you support their work, or when you give to the poor that they're involved with, you are going out. You're participating in that. Every missionary that you speak to will tell you exactly that, I'm sure of it. Those that support us, those that are involved in the work, we feel that you are part of the work as much as we are. I happen to have the blessing of being sent out and being able to minister in a place that my soul was made for. But in the same way, those of you that take part, when you give with that kind of a heart, you are taking part in the work. You know, you saw some of the things I was talking about, the poor people's meal, piglets, buying a piglet for the poor. This is how you're able to feed the hungry when there isn't such a big need in that sense here. But I think God has two sides to what he's speaking about here when he talks about the hungry and the naked. There's the physically hungry, but there's the spiritually hungry as well. And God calls us to minister to the spiritually hungry. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. He's not talking about physical bread here, is he? He's talking about bread for the soul. But it's exactly the same cinnamon that he's using here, isn't it? That it's a hunger, a spiritual hunger. What are people hungry for? What are people hungry for in your community here? Do you know? Do you know, or are you just guessing? You know, I think it's a well worthwhile thing doing a survey of your community here. I know you have a heart to reach out to them. Have you found out what the needs are here? I strongly suggest you devise a survey, have some questions, go door to door. You're not JWs, praise God. And you can start by saying that. I'm not a Jehovah's Witness, by the way, you know. I just want your opinion. People love to give their opinion. And if they believe you, they'll give their opinions. And you can find out what the needs are, what people are hungry for. Psychiatrists today tell us that people are hungry for acceptance, don't they? People are hungry for love. People are hungry for significance. Find out what your community is hungry for, and then you can set your programs to seek to meet those needs. Here, God also says in this passage through Isaiah that we are to clothe the naked. Again, you know, in the UK here, we don't have that many people that are in such a poor state that they haven't got clothes. But you go outside in the other places, there are plenty of places that don't have any clothes. I'll tell you a thing here. You can collect up clothes and you can send them out to Moldova or you can send them out to any other country. But I'll say a thing that's more useful. Send out the money. First of all, it's very difficult to get clothes and that sort of thing into countries. It's bulky, it's expensive. A lot of countries, like Moldova, for instance, there's a communist government back in power, and they're very against us bringing aid in. It's an ideological thing, because communists always looked after their people. If they have to bring aid in, there's something failing about the communist government. So they make it very difficult to get in. We can't bring in children's clothes, we can't bring in shoes for anyone, for kids or whatever. But if you send the money, it can be bought in that country, and that helps the local economy too, you know. So if you're wanting to help in those things, it's probably a better thing to give money and let them buy the things in the country itself, in Moldova or whatever other country. Interestingly enough, there's a Catholic organisation from Northern Ireland that have come to Moldova, and they picked three villages in Moldova that they wanted to help. And one of the villages was Kirkan, where we have a church plant. And they've come to the village and they've made this agreement that every family in Kirkan will get 250 lei per month from them. 250 lei is about £12.50, something like that. We'll get 250 lei, and they come every 2 months and they give 500 lei to every family in that village. When they were first coming to do that, I had some reservations, because I thought, this is what will happen. The families will take the money and they will drink it. But the reality is, they have not done that. They've used it for their needs. Many of them use it to plant their fields, which they might not have been able to afford to do. They meet needs, they buy whatever for their kids and so forth. It's really worked a wonderful blessing. And I was talking to the leader, you know, and he was saying that their heart was, rather than to bring the aid, things that we think they need, give them the money, the self-respect, and they can meet their own needs. And that's exactly what happened. So I was very encouraged that, of course, we can't afford to do that, but their organisation collects money to do exactly that, and they come over. And now, of course, what's happened after, it's been going on for about 8 months. The villagers know that there are no hidden conditions here. They're not being preached, they're not being pressed to be Catholics or anything like that. They're just being loved, and now they're really open to these kind of things. So it's a great blessing. Okay, nakedness, what's the spiritual equivalent here? Well, it's shame, isn't it? Shame is a big need. Here's a need that we can go out and meet. Shame. Are there any prostitutes in this area? I'm sure there are somewhere. They're full of shame. But let me tell you what I think is probably likely to be the biggest need that we have in the UK. Divorced people. Over 50% of marriages these days break down in divorce, don't they? How do you think a divorce person is feeling? You know what the church, I think, has ministered over the years? Divorce is the second unforgivable sin. That's what's happened in society. I understand, and I know this from my own self, because of, you know, we're ministering to these kind of problems in Moldova too. We need to get clear what our position of truth is. We mustn't devalue marriage, and the Bible says God hates divorce, but he doesn't hate divorcees. He hasn't made that the second unforgivable sin. So I think what we need to do, I know for myself, I need to do that, and I've spent a lot of time studying on it. I must get clear what God's true position is on divorce. Buy the books, buy different books, study it, get into a clear place where you understand what his heart is here. Yes, there's truth we need to maintain, not to devalue marriage. But you remember when that adulterous woman was brought before Jesus, the law said we should stone these? Did Jesus stone her? Did he compromise the truth? He said, no, go and sin no more. But he loved her. Justice, mercy, faithfulness. These are the weightier matters of the law. We must get to a place where we can love divorcees. Now that's bound to be, every part of the UK, that's bound to be a big area of ministry. These are naked people. These are people feeling shame, feeling bitterness, feeling hurt. Can they come to the church and find acceptance and love? They're much more likely to find further condemnation, aren't they? And yes, it is a difficult question. We do have to hold the truth and walk in it. But isn't it grace? Isn't it grace we're saved by? Doesn't mercy triumph over judgment? This is something I think where we probably need to examine our own hearts first and get into a clear place. And then not patronizingly reach out to the divorce, but find a way to reach out to them. There's a big, big, what's the word? Catchment area? I can't think of a proper word there. A big area where people are hurting and are naked. Last point he makes here, the homeless. Very challenging passage this. The homeless wanderers. Now there are homeless people in the UK, aren't there? So there is a need here. But again, we're talking about people that, you know, you can meet somebody that's got a need and you can spend a Saturday evening with them. You can give them a cup of tea. You can hug them. You can allow his vomit to be on your coat. But when 12 o'clock comes, you can go home and have a shower, go back into your own home, can't you? And you've done your Christian duty. And that's good. It's good enough. Plenty of people don't even go out and reach. But to bring someone into your own home, where you've got to live with that someone, will they see your warts and all? That takes, I think, a special gift of God. But we will never get that gift if we don't have a heart open to it. If we don't say to God, Lord, you know, I don't feel I can do this. I don't feel I can keep this. But I know this is your heart, Lord. You take in the wanderers. You take in the sinners. You take in the divorced. You take in the prostitutes. You take in the mentally unstable. You take in all those kind of people, Lord. Your heart is big and open enough for them. And I'm supposed to have your heart. And Lord, do something in me. Change me here, Lord. Give me the grace. You know, change my mind, Lord, that I'm even open to the concept that perhaps I should be led down this way. Now, I judge and condemn myself in speaking these things. Our home in Gotesh, we're not open in that time. We're choosy about who we have in our home. I mean, not from the West. We take everyone from the West. especially John and Joanne. But we are choosy about who we bring into our home in Gotesh for lots of reasons. And probably some of them are quite valid excuses. We have two small children. It's quite a burden in Mary. But both of us know that we must have God work in our hearts. That we would be open to receiving the homeless. Not just the physically homeless, but the spiritually homeless. You know, what about this church? Here's the spiritual side of this now. What about this church? Is this church a home for the homeless? What kind of a family atmosphere do we have here? When strangers come, do we welcome? You do welcome, I see that. We make them love, we give them a cup of tea. How much further do we go after that? Do we receive people? What kind of an atmosphere is there in this church? Can somebody who's a wanderer or lost come into this church and just find a real home? Well, let me say this. I think, first of all, when we minister these things, you know, we need to do good to all men, especially to those of the household of faith. Within our own church, our own family, are we looking after each other? You know, will you be your brother's keeper? You know, what did Cain say to Abel? Am I my brother's keeper? He said to God. Will you be your brother's keeper? For your own church, let alone outside? Will you, you know, lay your life down for your brother and sister? Are they family or just part of the church? You know, family is a different thing, isn't it? You do anything for your own family. Even when they upset you and they hurt you, they're still your family. And you look after them. Is that the attitude that we have one to another? If we establish these things in our practical dealing with one another in the church, we'll have a family atmosphere here. And people will come in and smell it, let alone feel it. They'll come in and just know, man, this is a place where there's love and acceptance. If we're doing it one to another. And then we need to reach out to others in the community and make this place a home. I just want to finish with one verse. If you've got Bibles with you, Psalm 68, if you want to turn to it with me. And I think this is the heart of God that our church should be. And I say our church, just the same for us. When I go back now, I've been doing a lot of studying, a lot of preparing in these weeks that I've been here, because we're going to bring a lot of changes into our churches in Gotesh. We've got to change so much in our outreach, in our meeting of people's needs. I've been so gospel-based, preaching the gospel, getting people saved, and I realise that, you know, there is just as much that Jesus has in reaching out to people, meeting people's needs. When you saw Jesus preach, you know, in the New Testament, how many occasions are there him preaching without having first met the needs of people or afterwards met the needs of people? Very few occasions. He's always meeting people's needs and then preaching. Okay, so, you know, I'm not preaching, you know, some kind of a high and mighty thing to you. These things are challenging me. These are things I need to deal with. We need to deal with as a church. Anyway, this is God's heart. Verse 5 and 6, Psalm 68. A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. God sets the lonely in families. He leads forth the prisoners with singing, but the rebellious live in a dry, sun-scorched land. God sets the lonely in families. Is that what we are here? Can God send the lonely to us here as a family? Amen.